The transport dropped and hovered 4 feet off the barren rock and dirt, and we jumped out quickly into the cloudless night sky, clearing the way for the next transport. Wherever the Unifieds had hidden their gunship, their pilots might well have noticed our landing. I had to shout instead of speak the orders over Interlink because the bastards had sludged the area, killing our communications devices. But it also meant the enemy couldn't call for backup, and they would need it. We had twice as much men.
Move out!
The first of the first started up the slope, 1,700 well-oiled killing machines. My infantrymen carried M27s and grenades, RPGs, and the combat skills of experienced Marines. Seen through the night-for-day lenses in my visor, the jagged edges of the cliffs and peaks reminded me of broken glass. About a mile up, we passed a saddle from which peaks rose in opposite directions. A platoon leader whose team was on point sent a runner to tell me that his men had found something.
What?
It used to be a dog, sir. It's just a headless carcass now. And I think there are a few more.
Ritz looked around the scene.
Think Freeman did this?
Shooting a dog wouldn't bother him.
I don't see any bodies. You think he shot the dogs and left the people?
If he shot the dogs, he shot the men that were using them. If they were natural-borns, they probably left the dogs to rot and buried the corpses of their men.
Now that I was alert to it, I saw blood on boulders and on the sheer rock face. Freeman must have ambushed them.
Have you found any bodies?
We found a section of a visor from a combat helmet.
He held up a shiny curved puzzle piece that looked just like ours, except that our men's combat visors were half window, half video screen.
Keep alert, Marines. One ambush is as good as another. A battalion marching uphill makes a tempting target.
The men on point reached a narrow rise where only a few men could pass at one time. There were no trees or boulders to use for cover. Moving quickly, securing the position, and clearing the way for more troops, we sent two entire companies up that 30-foot rise. Just a 30-foot rise. Child's play. The Unified's snipers had been patient. They waited for my fire teams and squads to cluster at the top of the rise. Then they fired at the larger group waiting down below. The shooting began like a rainstorm. One of my Marines toppled off a ridge and rolled a few feet along the ground. Every specking shot hit one of my men. They couldn't miss. They had waited until we had clumped together like fish in a barrel. Men returned fire, shooting blindly at first. They didn't know how far or how high to shoot, but when 1,500 men returned fire at a handful of snipers, distance and trajectory often take care of themselves. The distant ridge went silent. Then another sound cut through the night. The gunship cut across the night sky, shooting out of the darkness like a tracer round.
Oh, shit.
Like the sharpshooters hidden somewhere up the trail, the pilot in that gunship shot the rocket toward the tight cluster of men at the bottom of the rise. 100 rocket-propelled grenades flew at the black silhouette like a swarm of fireflies. At that moment, I thought you can't kill a man with a spit wad, no matter how many wads you shoot at him. But after seeing what happened next, I changed my mind. One moment, the gunship hovered in the air above us. Something happened in the dark, and it happened fast. The big bird dropped a couple of hundred yards. Then she crashed into the lap of a mountain. We marched another 2 miles through passes, up slopes, along ridges. The higher we climbed, the more the Unifieds hit us. We crested a particularly winding slope and found ourselves entering an exposed ridge.
Battalion, halt!
Battalion, halt!
Officers, confer.
General, once we cross this line, that is when the shooting begins. We'll have their asses pinned once we cross this ridge, and they know it.
I agreed. This was the part of the battle I always hated most, the part in which the enemy throws everything he has at you to stop you from getting into position, the part in which you lose men you didn't need to lose.
Looks pretty obvious, sir. Either we nuke the entire mountain, or we march straight ahead.
We're not nuking this mountain.
Then we march straight ahead.
The first of the first was a battalion that prided itself on being the roughest and most ready battalion in the Corps. On my command, they would charge ahead, fully knowing some of them would likely die. From what we had learned by surveying the slopes ahead, we had maybe 800 yards to go. Once we crossed this ridge, we would reach another rise, then the slender ridge that the Unifieds now occupied. Once we reached that final rim, we would face the enemy at close quarters, maybe even hand to hand. We had to make damn sure their armor ran out of batteries before we got that close. Looking across the sheer face ahead, I saw a path that ran under the cliff. The path was little more than an 8-inch patch of washboard rocks covered with a dusting of loose soil, but it led beneath the enemy and came up behind them. Once we crossed that face, we'd have the enemy surrounded with nowhere to go.
This assault would be a whole lot safer if we sent a company to flank them. One team to keep the enemy pinned, another to cut them down.
You want to send men across down that little ledge? It doesn't look stable and there's no cover. What if the Uni started an avalanche? They'd wash us right off the slope. Suicide, you know.
Was Hannibal committing suicide when he crossed the Alps? And the subject isn't open for debate, Ritz.
Yes, sir. General, do you think maybe we should send someone other than a 4-star general and the commandant of the Marines to lead this maneuver?
Pick out a company I can take with me.
Harris, this is the spec and first of the first. Every one of these bastards will follow you to hell.
He gave me 100 men, and we started down an unmarked trail that led along the face of a cliff. Soon, we were scaling the wall, digging our boots into dirt, and feeling for rock purchases, ignoring the 1,000-foot drop beneath our feet. Since the Unifieds were still sludging, I had no contact with Ritz or any of my men. Ritz didn't wait for us to hike to safety. He gave us a 10-minute lead. Then he began shooting. I held my M27 in one hand and squeezed handholds with the other. Looking through my visor, using night-for-day lenses, the ground on which I stood seemed to dissolve under my left foot when I took a step. I pressed my face into the mountain and grabbed at rocks and outcrops.
Breathe, breathe.
I closed my fingers around a knob of rocks that turned to dust. Dug into the slope as I was, my boots stabbed into shifting soil, and I kept my weight pinned into place. But between Ritz and the uneven scarp, it would take a trained marksman to hit us. The battle on the ridge would unravel slowly. If the Unifieds used their shields, Ritz would hit them with guns and grenades while he waited for the batteries to give out, and the UA troops would advance on Ritz's position if they powered up. With their shields up, the only weapon the Unifieds could use were the flechette cannons on their wrists, a short-range weapon. Someone got lucky and hit the Marine two places behind me, and he lost his concentration, then his balance. The man didn't fall straight down. I watched him as he rolled and bounced down the mountain, hitting a boulder or a shelf, pieces of armor falling from his body with every hit he took. Another man fell, then a third. By this time, most of the Unifieds had their shields up, or they would have pelted us with grenades.
Move it. Get your ass in gear.
We pushed farther, digging our boots into footholds, looking for rocks and outcroppings we could grab with our hands, and trying to balance ourselves on a narrow ledge that kept becoming narrower. I started to look down toward the base of the mountain and caught myself. When I read the Old Testament of the Bible, I was struck by the story of a woman who looked back toward the destruction of Sodom and Gomorrah and turned into a pillar of salt. If I looked down and lost my balance, I'd turn into a puddle of blood. I distracted myself by thinking about Freeman. 900 men they had sent for one lone assassin. They wanted Ray Freeman as much as they wanted me, maybe more. They had captured me on Mars, mucked with my brain, gave me fears, and tried to reprogram me. Then they set me free, like a fish you catch and release. Not Freeman. If they caught him, they would kill him. No reprogramming for him. That only worked on clones. I felt my heart racing, my mood lightening, my pace speeding up as we neared the path. 50 feet, 40 feet, 30 feet, 20.
We made it.
That thought, of course, offended the gods of war.